When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Into the Sunday Night Live stream. I'm Bobby Burton, joined by Rod Babers and Jerry Hamilton. Thanks to Joe Brown, veteran mortgage broker. You can see his number up on the screen there, 512-663-4744. Let's talk about the Longhorns. Texas picks up a big commitment, in my opinion, in the portal today. Defensive back, Javion Cole out of San Jose State. First team All-Mountain West a year ago, according to Pro Football Focus. The Longhorn women's softball team wins the Big 12 championship. That makes 12 championships, by the way, on the year for UT Sports in their final year in the Big 12. That's good stuff. And the men's baseball team takes 2 of 3 from Oklahoma State to move into a tie for second place in the Big 12. A lot of people bemoaning David Pierce, but all he does is continue to pick up series wins right now. No, it's not perfect, though. We can definitely attest to that. Still, moving forward, the softball team, by the way, ranked number one in the country right now as well. Jerry, you and Rod talking a little today. Jerry, you're on the road. I saw your interview earlier today with KJ Lacey as well as Kevin Wynn down there. Now you're on to see, I think, on to Jacksonville tomorrow to see Jamie French, the big wide receiver. What were your thoughts immediately about the pickup of Javion Cole, the defensive back out of San Jose State?
Yeah, I love the kids with a chip on their shoulder, right, that are going to keep proving people wrong. And I think that's what Texas has. I was told 5'10 and a half without shoes is about an accurate measurement for him after the Texas visit. Look, I think he's going to be really good in zone coverage, Rod. I think they really like what he can do in zone coverage. But he's got a – you know, he's got the eyes for the ball, man. I mean, he's a guy he makes plays on the football, and he's done it at every level. Whether he was under-recruited or not, he did it in high school. He did it at Cal Poly. He did it at San Jose State. So I think there's one thing that's not going to change with him as the competition level continues to go up. That guy finds a way to make plays on the ball, Rod B.
Yeah, no doubt. I love it. He's got some ball hawk in him. There's no question about it. I love the patience in his game. So I'm with you, Jerry. That's why he's so good in zone coverage. He has patience in his game. He's patient with his keys, and he's not afraid to be slow out of his back pedal, to be slow to retreat out when he's in zone coverage. So I think actually on that field side, when they play zone, and Texas plays a lot of cover four, pattern match zone, they're going to play, I think, more cover three. That's the Johnny Nansen influence. Yes. You're going to get in some more cover three this year, too. So when they do get into the zone coverage, I think he's spectacular. Their eyes are always reading the right keys and zone coverage, keeps his eyes on the quarterback. That's why he's able to make a lot of big plays on the ball. Man coverage, though, playing press man, which I know Texas wants to do more of. I think that's where you got to see a leap in his game. You got to see him progress a little bit playing press man. I just don't think he does it a lot. I love to go see actual game film. I've been trying to track down some game film, a lot of highlights on him. Obviously his high school film, but I love to go track down actual game film, see how often they're playing man, press man, bump and run. I've seen a few highlights, but those are highlights. Everybody looks good on a highlight. I want to go see how often he's playing press man and challenging guys. I know Texas wants to do more of that. And going into the SEC, obviously, you're going to be playing a more physical brand of football. But I like the pickup. Some people saying Texas may not have needed, they need to coach up their DBs more so than add DBs. No, they need to do both. They need both. They need to acquire more talent back there and need to coach those guys up as well. This is going to be a good addition to the Longhorn. And like you said, Bobby, about the chip on his shoulder, he's got something to prove. So he's coming in with a lot to prove, and he's coming in with a mindset that he's coming in to work. And he'll be competing for that, I'm assuming, that spot with Gavin Holmes. I'm sure they want to rotate those guys, but he'll be trying to earn the trust of the coaches so he can compete for some of those reps with Gavin Holmes.
And again, yeah. Texas beat out Auburn. So this was an SEC recruitment out of San Jose State University. There, a defensive backs coach there ran into one of my buddies in the college coaching world recently and said that they thought this kid has a pro future. On what level are we talking about? That remains to be determined. But they did not want to see him go at San Jose State. They thought he was a terrific player, obviously, there in San Jose State. So this one came down to Texas and Auburn. He canceled the Auburn visit and went Texas way. So it didn't look, he might have started at Cal Poly, but he ended up an SEC recruit. So kudos to him for that.
Yeah, I've got to add this. Tennessee had just offered him as well late last week. So it was going to come down to a big-time school. Texas got on him early. We talk about this, Jerry, the value of getting guys early in the portal, and that's what Texas did. Really the first big-time school to offer Javion Cole. And you know what? I think it paid off. I want to add this. You talked about productive. Listen to these stats. As a high school senior, now just a high school senior, 20 catches, 11 touchdowns. Okay. Five punt or kick returns for touchdowns. Okay. Five. Wow. Six interceptions.
Yeah.
Wow.
Named Oakland Athletic League Player of the Year, all East Bay Athletic Player of the Year. And then he went to Cal Poly. And as a true freshman, he had four picks. And last year, as a sophomore at San Jose State, he had three.
That's the other thing, Bobby. He's a two-year. He should be at Texas 2 years. That's the other thing. This should not be a one-year guy. And by the way, that's a lot of high-stepping into the end zone. He played DB, so I'll assume he high-stepped in the end zone. but like Rod Babers did. But, look, I mean, he's a two-year guy. I think that's where he becomes extremely valuable to Texas as well. It's hard to get those two-year transfers at the Blue Bloods, right? But Bobby is so that makes him very much a high priority target for me. But what you said, Bobby, is so key is you got to get on these guys early in the portal. You watched how Mike Norvell flipped it at FSU. They got on Jared Verse before anybody. They got on a number of guys in the portal before anybody. You have to get on these guys early. You have to be the first one to bat, so to speak, in so many cases, not 100%, but so many cases. And if you can get one that's a two-year player and is a starter-level guy for you, which that's all Texas is recruiting out of the portal, not recruiting backups out of the portal, he becomes very valuable for Texas because he's a two-year guy.
Yep.
Good stuff. All right, before we get going, and we're going to take a lot of questions today, we got somebody's asking about the bombshell report that Yahoo put out late last week about the future of college sports. We need to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little other Texas recruiting news and notes. James Simon, the running back out of Calvary Baptist, looks like he is one of those guys that we talked to over the weekend. Not sure if he's moving his time frame up or not. And also, James, at the same time, young man out of Santa Ana Modern Day, Jordan Davison, announced his top four. He's a running back. Texas did not make that. Texas trying to add to their running back group right now alongside Ricky Stewart out of Tyler Chapel Hill. So that's going on right now. We got some other things we want to talk about. Before we get all of that to all of that tonight, I want to say thank you to Joe Brown. Special thanks to him. He's your veteran mortgage professional. Joe has been providing mortgages in Austin and around Texas for more than three decades. In fact, he is a Navy veteran, has 2 degrees from the University of Texas, devout Longhorn fan. Give him a call. 512-663-4744. If you're looking for a mortgage, that's 512-663-4744. The other thing about Joe that I think is important to mention is that he really does specialize. He doesn't specialize. I wouldn't say it the right way to put it, but he wants people to know that if you're a Navy vet or a vet of any armed services, you can get the rule for a down payment on VA home loans right now that has changed. Vets with good credit can now get loans for up to $2 million with zero down payment. It's not just for first-time home buyers either. So if you're a vet, make sure you check out and talk to Joe. He knows all the rules. 512-663-4744. Thank you, Joe, for your sponsorship. All right, let's get to the chat. Let's talk a little bit with folks tonight. I think it's going to be fun. Let's start with John Campbell. John asks, I'm sure you've already discussed this, but I've been out of pocket for a bit. Can y'all give your thoughts on Ross Dellinger's bombshell article about the future of college football that's fast approaching? So I'm going to give y'all a little feedback on this. Jerry, I know you've been running around out and about, so I don't know if you've heard about this or not. But essentially, Ross Dellinger is saying that revenue sharing could be coming in as soon as 40 days.
Wow.
Okay. Now, they'll vote on it within 40 days. It wouldn't necessarily take effect until 2025, no later than 2025.
Yeah.
It would expand scholarships, and it could cost every school that wants to participate in this $30 million a year. $30 million. So all that money that Baylor and all those guys are crowing about getting in the Big 12, it just went poof. So just realize that. Damages tab, $2.9 billion. That's for old stuff. Implementation no later than the fall of 2025. It is a complete redo over the next look. It's basically saying it's coming. Everything that we've been talking about, they're getting a little bit more and more serious about it today.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a college coach on the basketball side predict about 2 months ago that this would happen inside 2 years. I think it's gone even quicker if this vote goes through, even quicker than what was expected. And my question to you, Bobby, I mean, and I get all of it, right? I'm sure Rod's got an opinion on this as well. But, I mean, look, it seems like employees of the state is on the way. These guys are going to become employees of the state. It can't be that far away if that's what we're talking about here.
Well, they're talking about a revenue cap, a revenue share cap of 17 to 22 million. The damages tab is 30 million a year. I mean, you realize how much money that is? I mean, that's going to hit people in the pocket. That's going to hit those schools in the pocketbook that may not want to be hit.
And it's pushing the two super conferences.
Quite that hard, at least.
Yeah, it's pushing the two super conferences, Rod. We've been talking about this for a while. This thing's headed to 224 or 30-team super conferences. Where that number ends up, I don't know. But that's certainly where we're headed in college sports. And I think one day we're going to have a G5 spring football league, and we're going to have the boys play the regular season. I think that's where all this has been headed for a while, and maybe it's going to get there quicker than we thought.
Yep, I think they're trying to avoid the employee model. I think they're trying to avoid so the revenue sharing. I'm not sure that's going to make them employees, because then you got to get into insurance and benefits. Right. And oh man, they don't want to go there. But that's right, Jerry. At one point, they go there. You're talking about employees of the state, then that's a whole different discussion. And then does this apply? Are we talking about a football model here only? Are we talking about those sports involved? Because then Title IX is going to have a say. So then you got a federal situation, because Title IX is going to have a say depending on if it's a football thing and how many other sports involved. So, no, it's happening. There's no way. Once the free market, which the free market was represented by NIL, once they allow the free market in, there's no stopping the free market. It's a powerful force. And I've always said, you're basically going to end up with an Android iPhone situation, right? That's your smartphone market right now. You got two choices. Same thing with major college sports. You're going to have two choices, SEC and Big Ten, because they're the only ones who can afford that price tag they're talking about right there, Bobby. That's a hell of a price tag. So there will be a real separation. And the reason that they're going that route potentially is because all the antitrust lawsuits that are right now going against the NCAA, they're probably going to lose them all. The courts don't like the NCAA. They think it is a borderline criminal syndicate that's violating antitrust laws and has been for decades. So every time somebody brings them a case, and the latest is House versus NCAA, which they're going to hear in January of 2025. Guys, there's some people predicting that because that's an antitrust lawsuit and the damages could be tripled, they're saying it could be $4 billion. Mm. A $4 billion overall price tag on that lawsuit. They know, even though that sounds like an expensive route they're going right there, that Bobby, you just mentioned, it's not even close to how much they're going to lose if they lose in court. Because the courts don't like the NCAA, and they don't care if it exists or not. They don't care if they abolish it or disassemble it. No, it's been gutted essentially anyway. And that's why they're deciding, you know what, we got to be extreme. And Big Ten and SEC are saying, listen, we can't depend on the NCAA anymore. We'll have to come up with our own governing authority of college sports. We can do that. We can figure that out. But right now, we got to save the overall sport from being, I think, essentially capsized by these antitrust lawsuits.
Yeah.
I think they're going to work. The NCAA is the vehicle of choice right now for the Big Ten and the SEC. And so I think they're going to try to work through the NCAA. But to Rod's point, I think the fallback is okay, no more NCAA. Yeah. And Rod, you're right. Your comment is accurate. The courts clearly see the NCAA as a sham.
Yep.
That's what they see it as. And there's documentation literally going back 30 years or 40 years when they first started using they coined the term student athlete. You know, that was a created term. Mm-hmm. They didn't used to call them student athletes. They were just students, but they started calling them student athletes. And how you treated a student athlete was different than how you treated a regular student. Yeah. And the NCAA is the one that actually came up with that term. It wasn't even. And so the courts have very little, very, very little. I don't know. They don't like the NCAA. They think it's a sham, essentially, prohibiting people from making money.
Yep. Hey, E. Kim brought up something. It was players will sign contracts with these changes to limit the portal. Bobby, is that the way you see this as well?
I definitely think it could be. I mean, you could have to sign if it's a true, like right now, the problem with NIL, you give a guy an NIL deal, it can't be tied to a particular school, even if the deal goes through a school. So it can't be part and parcel, a part of enrollment at a particular school. It could be to any school and you'd have to pay them. So now if they transfer, you know, what happens? My take on it is a little bit different. I do think that they'll do 1 and 2 year agreements. I think they'll do and so it'll be multi-year agreements, just like a scholarship could be theoretically. But the big piece with the portal right now, and we saw, we'll get back to that a little bit and talk about the Longhorns and as it relates to that, is, you know, when can they transfer? I actually think that they got this right. Transfer after winter, okay. And transfer after spring ball, but not, you know, the week before, not in the midsummer. Now, grad transfers are going to be a little bit different. Okay, I understand that. But I actually think they started getting something right with the portal right now. They've got more to go. But all in all, the portal is going to be part of it. Increased finances for scholarships. All of that stuff is on the table right now as we look at all of it together. All right, let's go and let's move on to another topic, if y'all don't mind. Let's talk a little bit more about Javion Cole, the new cornerback for the Longhorns. Too Broke to Pay Attention asks, with Cole in the fold, who's the next domino to fall for the Horns? We talked about maybe James Simon, somebody like that, the running back at Calvary Baptist. Anybody in the transfer portal, though, Jerry, more specifically?
Yeah, I mean, that's what'll be interesting. And Texas is still looking at other defensive backs, not a guarantee they go with two, right? It depends on the scholarship number, where Texas wants to go. Do they want to have 84? They want to have 85? Do they want to go 84 so they can move somebody on the 85th spot? I think defensive line, if somebody is there that Texas feels like is, we said, the juice worth the squeeze. I mean, that's really what it's coming down to. The guys who go in the spring have a huge advantage. The players that go in the portal in the spring, they have a little bit more leverage right now in school. So that's a piece to it. But we'll have to see on that. It's slim pickings out there. So those guys know that. And there's a lot of leverage going on amongst the players in the portal right now. So is the juice worth the squeeze? That's what's going to come down to. If you can find somebody, then yes. But again, you're talking about a pool of about 3-4 guys right now. I mean, that on the defensive front, that's what you're talking about right now. Now, grad transfers are a little different. Bobby. I mean, that could happen at any point in time. Now, it can't be SEC to SEC, but you could have a grad transfer that pops up here in the next couple of weeks in late May that decides that they're moving on, and he can end up being a pretty good player. I mean, so we'll see what happens there. So I don't think it's limited to just the names in the portal right now. We'll see if there's a grad transfer or two that pop up as possibilities, and I can't rule that out.
All right. Rod B, I got a question for you here. This is from Daniel Kinneman. Daniel, thanks for the super chat. Does UT sweep OU and A&M in football next year?
That's good, man. That's a good question. That's a good question. Right now, I feel like they do, but I feel like that's cocky and arrogant. I feel like they do because the Sooners are going through a lot of change, man. They got a lot of turnover. New coordinators on both sides of the ball. Basically, a whole new O-line, new quarterback, too. I'm not a Brent Venables hater either. I think he actually going to do a decent job there with the Sooners. But I just think the Longhorns got too much talent, and they got too much continuity coming back. Too much experience coming back in terms of the coaches and the continuity. So I'll take the Longhorns in that one. Against the Aggies, though, down in Aggie land. Oh, man, the rekindling of the rivalry.
They could be 6-5 and play like a 10-1 team that day.
Exactly. That's why I'm not going to be cocky about that. Yeah. I lost down there when we were supposed to win. Okay. Right. So I'm not cocky about that. You see, I'm thinking about it. Be like, of course we're going to beat them. No, man, because they could save their season and they could ruin Texas season. Either one would be good for them. They can get both and be great. But Jerry's right, man. They could be having a disastrous year and they beat Texas. They rush the damn field. All right. Yep. You know how that goes. So I'm going to lean toward yes on both because Elko's there with brand new staff too, right? He's going to be bringing in new staff, new culture, just a new scheme, everything. I'm going to go with Texas there too, but I would not be surprised if the Aggies, you know, that they basically, and I know they do. They got that one circled. Special schemes, special plays, everything.
You're gonna don't pull stay out in a hotel in College Station, Steve Sarkisian. Don't stay in College Station.
Exactly. I was a victim of that too.
Exactly.
What happened to us?
If he's wondering if he should stay in College Station, call Major Applewhite and ask.
Yep, don't do it.
They turned
a fire alarm on us. Don't do it. Don't do it. That's what I'm saying. Crazy things happen down there in Aggieland, but I will say I think Sark also has it circled. He knows also what it means, how big it is. So Sark, you know, he always got some in his bag for big special games. I think Sark understands what that game means. These young guys who came to Texas, they talk about bringing the brand back, and they talk about, you know, bringing the brand back to respectability and prominence and greatness. Beating the Aggies is part of that. It's been a while, but beating the Aggies is a big part of that. So Mac Brown should always say this. I bring you for two reasons. We gotta beat Oklahoma. We gotta beat A&M. And Mac always had the Texas State title. It sounded cheesy at the time, but everything your parents say sounds cheesy at the time. And then you realize later on, damn, that's some wisdom in that Texas State title. Because Mac always said, we gotta win the state title. What was the state title? We gotta win every game we play in the state of Texas. Yep. Every game we play in the state of Texas. And when you think about it, it's cheesy at the time because it was just a fictional title. But you're basically playing for the national title essentially if you win every game in the state of Texas because you'd win the Texas OU game. You're going to win the game against A&M. The only game that probably could threaten you would be a game against K-State back then. You wouldn't worry about Kansas. Iowa State wasn't really they weren't a power back then. K-State was your one kind of out-of-the-state game. You're like, man, maybe Oklahoma State, maybe later on, maybe, but not too many. Most of the time, you win in the state of Texas, you gonna have a damn good year if you were undefeated in state. And honestly, I'm not sure we ever did it. Not while I was there, it was tough to win all because you had to beat Oklahoma. I only beat Oklahoma once, so I couldn't say I did it then. And then it definitely didn't happen in '99 to win the state title. So it was tough to do that. And Mac was right. So I think if Sark can just, hey, man, win the state title, win all those games in the state, go undefeated in the state, start there.
And I'll say this, too. I'll add to this. Mac's first year, and I don't know if this affected Rod, but look, it was different times because A&M was rolling under RC. But when Mac won that game in year one, when Ricky broke the record in that game and he won that game in year one, that was huge for recruiting in Texas at the time for Mac. And it's different times now, but here's my point to that. It's almost the flip side. After Texas won the Big – beat Alabama, won the Big 12, went to the college football playoff, A&M had a window when Texas was down for the last decade, and they did nothing with it at all. They had one 9-1 season during COVID, but they did nothing with their window. Essentially, Manziel won a Heisman, then it collapsed, right? I mean, they just didn't do anything with their window. So now A&M's sitting there, they're looking over at Texas saying, "Woo, man, Texas is they're back. They're recruiting at a high level. They're getting guys drafted. They went to the college football playoff. Now they're in the SEC. Makes us want to go to the Big Ten." That's a huge, huge game for Mike Elko in year one, guys. Huge game.
Yep. I got to say a couple things. One is I think that you talk about games that are circled. I don't think Steve Sarkisian is going to let Brent Venables outcoach him this year. Yep. And I think that Sark realizes, I think he went in that game maybe not as focused on the Sooners as maybe they all should have been from a game plan perspective. I don't think he had enough special stuff lined up.
Rod nailed that last year. Yeah. He had 6 months to prepare for Alabama. That was Sark's Super Bowl last year.
Yep.
Until the Big 12.
I think he's going to prepare somewhat similarly for Michigan this year.
Agreed.
While realizing he can't also not prepare for Oklahoma somewhat similarly. Now, he's got an older quarterback to do it with, too.
Yes.
Now, that will help that situation. And then A&M late, to y'all's point, I think he has to be ready to coach that one up pretty hard. Georgia is that one that if you circle that one, that's be careful one. Because you could still – you could circle that one and end up with an L still, right? Yeah. And so you don't want to put too much emphasis on that. I want to say this. Y'all were talking about Mac and that sort of stuff and winning the state championship. It kind of reminds me, and this is what I just immediately went back to, Dabo Swinney. And the similarities between him and Mac Brown are just eerie to me.
Yeah,
Dabo won two national championships. One with Deshaun Watson as quarterback and one with Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Mac was within three quarters of winning two national championships. Mm-hmm. He won one with VY, and he was in the national championship game against Alabama until Colt got hurt. I felt like Texas was going to win that game.
Yeah.
The similarities between those two go beyond that. They also were very stubborn in recruiting their own way from then on, and it hurt them down the line.
Yeah.
So Mac became very, very stubborn in who he wanted to recruit and how he wanted to recruit, as opposed to being very open when he was younger. But, right, Rod?
I'll add another layer to that. When Dabo got the job at Clemson, Spurrier was at South Carolina kicking a little butt, and he had to get over that hump as well, just like Mac had to get over that hump against A&M. South Carolina was the top program at that point in time. I mean, Marcus Lattimore, Clowney, all those guys, right? And I believe South Carolina won six in a row at one point in that series. But Dabo had to get over that hump as well. And there's so many similarities. I mean, Dabo, look, he made some hay in Atlanta when Mark Richt couldn't get over the hump at Georgia. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening? Well, there's Kirby Smart. I mean, so there's some similarities in the region there, but better teams, obviously, but a lot of similarities to your point, Bobby.
Yeah, and also remember, Mac wanted to keep Texas football kind of mom and pop shop. He didn't want to, you know, expand the support staffs and use all the full weight of the brand. And he, by the way, he did it with good intentions. He thought it was unfair, basically, to hire all these. He was actually fighting for more rules against hiring unlimited support staff, which is crazy because Texas could have benefited from that. Teams like Alabama and Steve, obviously what Nick Saban did, he took it to the next level. And look at what Dabo's doing, right? Dabo kind of fights against the progress of major college football, anti-transfer portal, anti-NIL. And he thinks he's doing it for the integrity of the game, right? To kind of keep the kind of balance in the game. But that's what Mac was thinking too. Mac was like, no, I don't think it's fair to separate the have and the have nots. So it's like, no, use all your advantages, all of them.
Like, why? Where do we if the NCAA isn't writing Mac Brown's check or Dabo Sweeney's, Texas and Clemson were writing his checks. Yeah. Think what's best for Texas and Clemson.
I know it's not what we're talking about, but the Dabo non-portal recruiting blows my mind.
Crazy. Because
the best college coach we've seen in our lifetimes with Nick Saban. And what did he do best that kept him on top of college football for the longest? He adapted. Evolved and adapted. And Dabo refuses to adapt. I just don't see how that's going to end well. I just don't. FSU zipped by him in 2 years.
Yeah. Him and Gundy. Mike Norvell
was close to being fired. Now he zipped right by him.
You're right.
And it was due to the portal. They had nine. FSU had 10 guys drafted in the draft 2 weeks ago. Nine of them were transfers.
Wow. New age, man.
The transfer portal can help you get healthy quick. Yeah, that's no doubt about it. You talked about that number, Jerry, 10 guys drafted. That brings me back to the number of guys that Texas has now brought in via the portal, it was in the winter or the spring period that we're in right now. Texas at 10 total transfer portal guys. 24 have exited, by the way. That number is now solid. No more exits for Texas or anybody, for that matter, that hasn't already put their name in the transfer portal. The portal officially closed on Tuesday of last week. So we'll talk about that. Cisco Diaz has a good question here, and I'll try to answer it for you. Has Texas completely given up on another DT? I don't think they've found one that they want at this point is the problem. Now, could there be one that comes available as a grad transfer? Maybe. Is there another one that they want to take another look at that we're unaware of right now? Potentially. But as of right now, we do not know of another defensive tackle that Texas is absolutely going to go on and try to get in. And then I want to follow that up with this from David Keith Williams. If fans, in quotation marks, fans, were complaining about Dominic Williams and his supposed demands 4 days ago, I wonder how they feel about revenue sharing. Here's my point on this. I don't know that fans were upset that Dominic Williams tried to get the most money he could.
Sure.
I mean, that's just, you know, if you call it, that's what you're doing, then that's what you're doing. I don't think fans can get upset about that. I mean, he wasn't a Texas signee to begin with. You know, he's from Southern California originally. It's not like he had this grand tie to the Longhorns or something that indebted him to them. And so I don't know if I like that if I agree with that characterization that fans were complaining about him taking the highest bid, so to speak. I you know, more power to him in some ways, in my opinion. It doesn't mean that Texas has to necessarily agree with what that bid was. And that's Texas's prerogative as a program, in my opinion. All right, this is another question. This one from Thunderpup. So can you have a player, quote, sign a revenue sharing contract, and the condition would include guaranteed 2 years without eligibility for portal until year three? Wasn't this what Saban was wanting to do? They haven't said exactly how it's going to work yet, Thunderpup. I can't sit here and tell you that what you can and can't do. I would hope they have multi-year agreements available. I think that makes a lot of sense for a lot of players, especially ones that get happy feet. Like, I don't know that Texas is a little lucky in that. I don't know more than one or two guys maybe that I think got happy feet in the last 2 years and left the Texas roster prematurely. But I know that other schools feel like they probably had some like that and would like an opportunity to go backwards. And what's interesting to me is they want revenue sharing between $17 and $20 million a year for basically a salary cap of sorts.
Yeah.
Okay. That's interesting. I mean, if you can't have it, but here's what it does. That doesn't mean that it precludes teams from also using NIL above and beyond the revenue share.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.
Why don't y'all think about that for a sec?
Yeah.
So we'll see how all this goes. Let me ask y'all, Rod, what do you think? You've signed a contract before, an NFL contract. What do you think young guys should do? 2 years, 3 years minimum? Would you go back to the only one transfer rule? What are the kind of things that you would look for in that kind of deal with the NCAA?
Yeah, it'd be tough because right now I believe that they just agreed on a new transfer rule, right? You can transfer without limits as long as you have a certain eligibility, certain academic requirements that you have to meet. Yep. But you can transfer without any penalty, and I believe it's a limitless amount of transfers right now too. Of course, you have every conference, they'll have their own rules, like the SEC. Transferring within the conference, but it's interesting because in the NFL, guys want shorter contracts so they can get to the free market more often. Right, that's the whole purpose. They like, you know, they want a shorter contract. The teams want longer contracts, right? Patrick Mahomes got a 10-year deal. That's ultimately what you want as a team. Lock a guy up for as long as you can, and you lock him at a certain rate, and then you ain't got to worry about the market pushing the value of that player, and worry about them having compete with the market and bargain with the market, negotiate with the market over and over again. So I'd imagine you'd like to hit the open market as much as possible if you're a player. Now, that's if you're a good player. Now, if you're not a great player, say you're not an elite player that everybody covets, well, then you're looking for more about job security. You're looking for – and you – so I'm agreeing with you, Bobby. I think you want multiple options if you're a player. You like the option to sign a 1 year, like the option to sign a 2 year, like the option to sign a 3 or 4 year deal if you want that, if you as a player want that. So I think that would, because every guy is going to be different. Every player in the situation is going to be very different in terms of what they want. I mean, look at some of these quarterbacks. You're a QB. You're in some position. You're a quarterback. Hell, man, if I'm a D tackle these days, I might decide if I'm in a premium position, I want a one-year deal, man. I'm on a one-year deal for me because I might want to transfer to go get a job, or I might want to transfer just to go test the free market. You're a quarterback. Quinn Ewers for that market. Any of these quarterbacks. Quarterbacks are a one-year deal position to me.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Hey, we're getting a lot of questions about Javion Cole from people that just joined us. We're going to reset a little bit here and give y'all a chance to talk about those guys. But before we do that, I want to say thanks again to our sponsor. That is Joe Brown of Southside Bank. He's a veteran professional mortgage broker. Great guy. Getting a mortgage these days for self-employed borrowers can be frustrating. Joe specializes in guiding them through the loan process using his decades of lending experience, 3+ decades, by the way. That's why financial advisors and CPAs often refer their clients directly to Joe. Joe has a UT grad, 2 degrees from Texas, as well as being a Navy veteran. Also does the VA loans very, very effectively as well. Give Joe a call, 512-663-4744. That's 512-663-4744. All right, resetting real quick. Texas picked up a commitment from Javion Cole, defensive back out of San Jose State earlier today. He visited the Longhorns from Thursday through Sunday, 5'10.5", we believe, around 185, 190. Had 3 interceptions last year at San Jose State as a true sophomore, 4 as a true freshman at Cal Poly. So this will be his third school in 3 years. And he keeps trading up, if you notice the trend line there for him. He ran a 10.67 100 meter in high school, so he's got some wheels on him as well. Then also, Texas won the baseball series against Oklahoma State earlier today. They actually lost the final game, but won 2 of 3. They are now in second place. And the women's softball team is now your Big 12 champions. They won the whole series. They are now number one ranked team in the country. That gives Texas, the university, 12 Big 12 championships in the final year of it. If you notice this, John Bianco, the sports information director at the University of Texas, with Big 12 championships this year, Texas has now won 3 times more than any other conference school. The 12 wow. titles match the total of the 13 other members combined.
Oklahoma State, four,
Iowa State, two, Oklahoma, two, Texas Tech, wow. two, BYU, one, Houston, one.
My take on another. Yeah, two things, Bobby. BYU and Houston get one moving into the league. Oklahoma fans, you're down two to Oklahoma State? And your last year in the Big 12, you really going to go out like that? Come on, man. Oklahoma State's going to have more Big 12 titles than you are on the way out the door. That doesn't bode well in the SEC.
Hey, somebody posted on Twitter today, and I don't know who – I can't remember the name of the person that did it. But they posted a fact that was just awesome. You guys realize in the final matchup, regular season matchup, of every sport that they both participate in, Texas defeated Texas Tech this year. Every sport that they both participate in.
Man.
Texas won the final regular season game.
Wow.
Just something to consider. All right. This question from Kelly. We're going to talk a little bit more about JV and Cole in a second. Before we do that, we are also talking earlier about A&M and the game down in College Station this year. Rod, will Texas's depth being better than A&M's and being late in the season perhaps give Texas an edge in that game?
Well, can't account for injury luck, right? We never know how that's going to go. We'll knock on wood and say. But that's what Sark's trying to guard against. That's exactly the point the person in chat is making there, is that, you know, Sark's talked about they need more depth. He likes rotating guys, so he wants to give as many guys quality reps during the season as possible. And then by the end of the season, some of those guys who were considered inexperienced or maybe young, they're considered veteran players toward the end of the season, and you can get some quality reps from those guys. So, yeah, I mean, that's what Sark wants to do. It's a little frustrating for Longhorn fans that he rotates so many guys on defense, but that is so they're fresher in the fourth quarter, but also fresher toward the end of the year, and so they can sustain injuries. So, yeah, no, you're right. I mean, Texas should have all the advantages against Oklahoma and A&M. So hope I didn't make Longhorn fans feel anxious about that. I'm just saying rivalry games, as y'all know, are wild. Rivalry games are crazy. Throw out the record. You can throw out the, you know, over-unders and throw out, you know, the betting lines. They're rivalry games. So anything can happen. You got a lot of emotion. It's a tense situation. So, and it's the first time you've been playing A&M down there for the first time in, what, 15 years, whatever it is? It's a long time since you've been down there in Aggieland. So, I just think that's why I'm reluctant to just be arrogant and cocky about a prediction. I do think the Longhorns are better than the Aggies. They're better than the Sooners, too. No question.
Look, I think there's two keys for A&M's season. Mike Elko's going to play good defense. A&M's got enough good defensive players. They still have enough up front on the defensive line. Nick Skowerton, maybe a first-round pick out of the portal, by the way, Dabo. Look, offensive line and Wiegman's health. That's what their season's going to hinge on. Last year, there were turnstiles on the offensive line, and Wiegman got punished and didn't make it through the season. Chase Besantis is not a tackle. He's a guard. So A&M's offensive line is going to tell the story of their 24 season. They have to keep Connor Wiegman healthy because they're going to play good defense. Mike Elko will keep them in all or the vast majority of their games with good defense, good defensive scheme, good enough defensive personnel. Edwin Cooper's a big loss at linebacker, but their defense front's going to be really good again. So it's going to come down to Wiegman staying healthy and offensive line for A&M next year. If they get improved offensive line play, they'll be a quality team. But last year, they were turnstiles. They were bad on the offensive line when they had to be good in that conference.
Let's see what Colin Klein can do with that offense too. The new coordinator for A&M right now. Of course, coming over from Kansas State legacy there, but moving to A&M. I think you're right, Jerry. One deep, very, very talented roster still. Dangerous roster, in fact, I would say. All right, Justin Yarbrough got here late, but how do we like the commitment from Cole? Rod, how does he compare to Brooks? Thanks, Justin, for the super chat. Guys, let's just take a poll real quick. Do we like this guy as a player? And then let's talk about how he compares. I'm going to go out and say it. I've liked this guy from the first time I started doing research on him, watched his high school film, read a little bit more about him, and then watched some college film as well. I've liked him the whole time more than maybe what some other people have been saying. Oh, well, he doesn't play. He's not this big name guy that's going to be a top five draft pick. Not everybody's going to be a top five draft pick, and they can still play in the NFL potentially. Yeah. So I'm a yes. Rod, Jerry, y'all want to go next?
Yeah, I'll let Rod break him down after this, but I like him for the same reasons you do, Bobby. I like guys that have the correct chip on their shoulder. I love that he has moved up with every level of Division I football. I like that about him. I like that when you actually do the research on him, he was that Oakland player of the year. I mean, the Oakland player of the year, that is a very talented area. It's just not talked about very much. It's in NorCal. I mean, you go look of the you go look back at the players of the year out of Oakland. There's a lot of tremendous athletes on that list. So I like that. I like that he's hungry. He's similar to Silas Bolden to me like that, even though Silas has done it at the Power 5 level. I think he feels the slight. I think he's coming to Texas and to play in the SEC with something to prove. And I think those guys are so, so very important for maximizing a team, because Texas has a bunch of guys on this roster right now that were part of top five recruiting classes and transferred from the Alabamas or the major schools to Texas. What Texas doesn't have that many guys like, or like Silas Bolden, or like Javion Cole, guys that were, they feel slighted in the recruiting process that now are stepping on the biggest stage with a chance to prove everybody wrong. I love having 6-8 of those guys on a roster.
Yeah, and he's going to translate well to when Texas plays, you know, that cover four pattern match. When they play there, they're going to play some more cover three, at least based on what I saw in the spring game and based on Johnny Nansen's influence. I think they're going to play some more cover three. So when Texas plays those zone coverage, he's going to be great. He's excellent in zone coverage, really patient, retreating out of his stance. I always say that young guys, you know, they get out of their stance way too quickly. You can be patient, read the three-step. You can see him reading the three-step at times. And you can also kind of see how deliberate his process is. After the three-step, you can see his eyes snap right back to that number two receiver, snap right back to the number one receiver. So he's really disciplined with his eyes in zone. That's why it leads to a lot of interceptions for him, a lot of plays on the ball. He is a ball hawk, though. The guy loves to make plays on the ball. He will, I would say, cheat at times. And it's not really a cheat. It's just he'll take chances. He'll take risks. Malik Muhammad's like that too. But these guys, when they are technically proficient with their technique and their fundamentals, it allows them to take those types of risks. And he is really proficient when it comes to his off coverage and his zone coverage. I think he plays really good off man too. I haven't seen enough tape of him and see how much they play press man. I'd like to see more of that. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole and try to see how much I can find. A lot of highlights out there. And, of course, he's going to look good playing press and highlights. So I'm trying to get some game film and see how much they play press, because Texas wants to play more press on the outside. But if they are indeed still playing field, because I even think they might be getting away from the field in the corner and going more left-right with these corners. But he is a guy that just kind of strikes me as a field cornerback on that wide side of the field that can play zone coverage for you. And I think he's excellent in that respect. I wonder whether he can play bump and run consistently, but he's got the physical traits for that to translate. I mean, he can run. He's got decent size. He's about 5'10", 185, 190. I mean, hell, I played bump and run coverage. He's bigger than me. I can't.
You took the words out of my mouth here. I was going to say, this Lon Beans is Cole the second coming of Rod. Same measures. No. Rod wishes he was 5'10 and a half. He would have been around higher in the draft.
That is true.
Bro. Look, Cole still got to prove the speed to me, though, the Rod speed. Rod, I say this about a few guys. Rod could roll out of bed and run 4.4 and not even have to stretch and touch his ankles. I mean, that's a different level speed and quickness.
I appreciate that, brother. Not anymore, but I appreciate that, yeah.
Hey, I will say this. He may have less than you. He may have better hands than Rod.
That is true.
He seems to have some sticky hands when he gets a chance to get his hands on the ball. 7 interceptions in 2 years. I don't care what level in D1.
By the way, we should ask Silas Bolden about him. He played Oregon State last year. I'm gonna have to text Silas Bolden and ask him if they matched up.
That's good.
Good stuff.
Please
good stuff.
Do.
Hey, this one from Daniel Kinneman. Jerry, I'm going to ask you where you've been this or where you're going this week. You're on the road, obviously.
Yeah.
You were in Alabama on Wednesday, Thursday, then down in Georgia for a couple days, meeting with some players that Texas is interested in. Daniel Kinneman gives you a little jerky fun here. Over and under 15 commitments by July 1. All these visits coming up in June, that's not unheard of to be at 15 by July 1, Jerry.
Yeah, I would say maybe a little under that, but then it'll pick up right after that, in that second after July 4th. But yeah, so I was at Saraland on, oh gosh, I've lost track of my days, Thursday that was of last week to watch KJ Lacy. Auburn coaches were three deep there. KJ Lacy up to 186 pounds. He was 172 pounds during the season last year. He had a little bit of a growth spurt. I think he's grown half an inch since he committed to Texas. So he's kind of tracking the right way. I mean, he's a younger kid. Him and Antonio Coleman, the D lineman, committed to Alabama. They're both younger kids. They could be sophomores by age, really. So they're young in that junior class, fixing to be senior class. Both those guys are, I think, hitting a little bit of a growth spurt and development spurt right now. But KJ Lacy remains committed to Texas. Will visit June 21st through 23rd. Obviously, he knows, him and his circle knows, that Keelan Russell visited Texas and that Texas is keeping tabs on Keelan Russell. So if an offer is ever made, then could that change things? Probably, possibly. So we'll see what happens there. But Texas has not offered that second quarterback as of an hour ago when we started the show. Then Friday, I was at Carrollton, Georgia, at Mount Zion High, and that's where Kevin Wynn, the D-tackle from Greensboro, Greene County, which is a hike. It was a sectional track meet up there. He was throwing the discus and shot put. So it was a chance for me to go see Kevin Wynn in person, meet him, because he scheduled his official visit to Texas on Tuesday of last week after Kenny Baker came by the school. Great kid, 6'2", in change, 315. That without shoes on, 6'2¼", probably 315 in person standing next to him. Big, strong kid, big 10.5-inch hands, right? I mean, he's that kid. Rod, y'all will love this. Bobby will love this. I said, what do you love most about football? And the video interview with KJ Lacy and Kevin Wynn is up on Texas Football right now. Our producer Matt Huddleston put that up a couple hours ago. I asked Kevin Wynn, what do you love most about football? He said, physicality. I said, I'm sold. I mean, that's all you need to say. If you're 6'2", 315, and you love the physicality of playing on the defensive front, that's why you have FSU and Georgia and Texas all after you. In South Carolina, that's the Final Four. The big key with his recruitment, guys, he wants to be a chef. So culinary is big with him. Does that mean he has to major in it? I'm not saying that, but that's going to be part of everything he looks at, whether it's the city he lives in. South Carolina's done a really good job recruiting to that culinary institute and culinary arts program at South Carolina. I think they've closed the gap on Florida State there a little bit. We'll see with Georgia. He was at the spring game for Georgia. He's never been on campus at Texas, but he loved Kenny Baker. He loved the first meeting. They hit it off. And so he'll visit Texas June 14th through 16th. I'm in Florida. I'm in Jacksonville. I'm a glutton for punishment. I think I walked 12 miles today. My foot's hurting, as of course, because I'm old, Rod. But so we got Jacksonville Mandarin tomorrow. That's Jamie French. I'm going to make another stop as well, but we're going to come. Some of these we won't make public yet. So Jamie French tomorrow for practice. Tuesday, I'm going to go see Derry Norris and Brandon Brown. Obviously, Brandon Brown, the tremendous borderline five-star commitment in my book, commitment to the University of Texas from O'Galley. Just too so explosive, way underrated nationally by everybody. And I think colleges are underrating him too. And then Wednesday may go down and see Dia Bell. We'll see. Thursday, I'm going to see Myron Charles at Port Charlotte. So we're going to see some of those top guys in the state. And there'll be a couple other stops around there as well. But it's going to be a big week coming up. Look, Texas is offering more guys in Florida than ever before. And that's good for me because I like going to see these guys in Florida. So these are fun trips for me. But I'm very excited to see Jamie French tomorrow because I think he's in between CeeDee Lamb and A.D. Mitchell as a player for me. And I'm not talking them in high school. I'm talking them now where he could go. I think he's got more after the catch than A.D. Mitchell. Maybe not feet on fire quite like CeeDee Lamb, who I thought was really special with his feet at the college level. I think he's in between those guys, though. I think he's really good after the catch, a lot better than maybe giving credit for. I'm excited to see it in person tomorrow.
He's a five-star receiver from Jacksonville, where Jerry's at tonight, just to wrap
and
up.
And by the way, I think Texas and LSU are the top two, and Tennessee and Miami are 3 and 4. I think Ohio State slipped.
Got it. All right. Let's pay attention to this next question because it's going to be a big one here, guys, from Jameson Washington. What does Texas need to do to be SEC champs and national champs. And I'm going to just say my take on it, and then I'll hear from you two, Jerry and Rod. Mine is they just need to play as and come together as a team. That is a big, big thing that we can all say that. I mean, the teams that are champions, typically the individual parts are not worth as much as the sum of the team, right? The team actually comes together to be worth more than the individual pieces are. And I want to see if Texas does that. I thought they did that at times last year. They stood up against Kansas State when Malik Murphy was the quarterback, right? They won that game, not with – I mean, Malik did a good job in the first half, did not have a good second half, but still when they had to have it, they won it on offense with a kick, then they stopped them on defense. And that was a team rising up. When Quinn Ewers went down against Houston, did not have a good game, the defense stepped up. The offense unloaded against Texas Tech and some other – I mean – my point being, I thought that the team coalesced a little bit last year. That's what they have to do again this year and get a little lucky on injuries. So those two things are the big ones for me. Rod or Jerry, y'all want to take that?
Yeah, so for the SEC, I got a simple answer. Play Georgia twice next year. Because if you do, that means you're in the SEC championship game. That's what you got to do to win the SEC is see Georgia twice. That's going to be the key. Look, I think the edge pressure is going to be the key for Texas next year. I think Trey Moore, Colin Simmons, older Baron Sorrell, Ethan Burke, see if Colton Vosick stays healthy for a long extended period of time. I'm not saying he won't, but I just want to see it. But I think the edge pressure is going to be huge for Texas defensively next year. They have to get more hits on quarterback, get quarterback to ground a little bit more. If you look at some just go back and look at the teams that won a national championship and how many sacks they had. Even Georgia was a little bit lower their second title, but just go look at how many sacks those teams had and look at it in a 13 or 14 game season. And now think about adding possibly another game to that as well. So you got to get more hits on the quarterbacks. You got to get quarterbacks to the ground. If you ask, and Rod can say this, if you ask your DBs to cover for 4 seconds in the SEC, the athletes are too good. You're in trouble.
Yep.
Rod, what do you think they got to do? What do you think they got to do to win the SEC? Possibly win a national championship.
Yeah, I mean that's what's the checklist here. What they got to do? They got to fix the pass defense. Got to fix it. It could just be the edge pressure that fixes it, like Jerry said. You got to fix the pass defense. You do. It has been a problem for the last 3 years, pretty much, and it looks like it still may be a problem based on what we saw in the spring game. So that's number one for me. I think also. You know, Quinn's development. I think Quinn's going to be great, but we need to see Quinn get into a discussion where he can be either in New York or in the conversation to be the top quarterback taken. If he's in that kind of conversation, man, that means the wide receiver chemistry came together for him with all the weapons. That means the O-line's probably playing really well. And if it's not playing well, that means he's ascending in spite of the offensive line not playing well. But I think the offensive line is going to be good next year. I think the wide receivers are deep. I want to see Quinn put the cape on a few times, and I want to see Quinn put himself in a conversation to be the top quarterback off the board. If he can do that, I think Texas will be in a conversation to win a national title, no doubt. I think Quinn's a first-round quarterback. Based on what I've seen now from the NFL draft, Quinn's a first-round quarterback. Hell, he might have snuck into the first round last year, potentially how he ended the season, because right now they had six taken in the top 12, guys. And they weren't all supposed to be first-round quarterbacks. So you got elite traits. They're going to overlook your downside and only look at your and look at your upside. And they're going to that's going to push you into higher up into the first round. That's been happening the last decade or so. So Quinn's going to be a first-round quarterback unless he has some disastrous happen. But can he be the quarterback? Is he in the conversation to be one of the top three quarterbacks off the board? That'll be the conversation. And he should be in New York if he's in that conversation.
You mentioned top pick, first round pick. ESPN came out with their 2025 mock, their first one. They had Quinn going 12 overall.
There you go.
If Quinn were to go 12 overall, Texas doesn't win the SEC. If Texas wins the SEC, Quinn's going top five. I got news.
I got you. Yeah, I got you. Okay.
I agree. I got you.
That's a no-brainer in that regard if they play that well. Because he will have led them. I mean,
he will have beaten Kirby Smart twice and Kirby Smart's defense too. That would be a big play. Yeah.
Yeah. You're the Texas. Quinn goes 12. Texas didn't win the SEC. That would be my point. All right. Wow. I want to say thanks again to our sponsor, Joe Brown, veteran mortgage broker in the Austin area, but does loans throughout the state of Texas. Been providing mortgages around the state for more than three decades. He's also a proud Navy vet and a devout Longhorn fan, 2 degrees from the university. Give him a call, 512-663-4744. That's 512-663-4744. All right, got time for a couple more questions tonight before we have to get going here. We'll be back tomorrow morning with the coffee and football early in the a.m. Jerry, I'm going to let you take this one. Jerry, Keelan Russell looks like $1 million. He ran on the 4x4 team for Duncanville, by the way. I think he was the lead leg, the leadoff leg for Duncanville this weekend. Are we sure he shouldn't be our QB take for the 2025 class? Are we sure about anything? That would be my first thing. But second question, what do you think about Keelan Russell and where Texas sits right now, especially vis-a-vis the situation as it sits with KJ Lacy out of Saraland, Alabama?
Yeah, so I think interesting, Keelan Russell's got a lot of developments in his recruitment. Alabama offered, 2 weeks ago? He's got an official visit set up there. May 31st through June 2nd. I believe he just visited Ole Miss officially. He's got Florida scheduled for June 7th through 9th if they don't get a quarterback commitment before then. Obviously, he's got SMU mid-May. So I think we'll see A.J. Milwee on the road. I think he's scheduled to be at Saraland Monday or Tuesday. My question will be around this, and I think we have to wait to see the answer. Does Texas eventually talk to both guys about saying we're going to have a two-man quarterback class? The reality is you won't get to, but could that become a topic of conversation? I think that remains to be seen. As of right now, Texas is saying it's a one quarterback class, but things can always change. I think Keelan Russell's a tremendous prospect. Those of you that have been on this on Texas football for a long time, I loved him last year in spring practice. I talked about him the day I was there. I thought he showed tremendous command, poise, really good feet in the pocket, the ability to change ball speeds. Because I was there for a spring practice. There were multiple Big 12 or and Power 5 coaches there, three offensive coordinators. I was there today. Bobby Petrino and A&M offered him. And, you know, those weren't easy spring practices when Alex January and Colin Simmons are on the other side of the ball, okay? And they had a middle linebacker that would knock you whatever out. But he showed a lot of poise and a lot of playmaking ability in the pocket in that practice setting that I thought bode very well for his future. And he's a really good athlete, but he's a quarterback that wants to play in the pocket and only use his athleticism when it's the last resort. I think he's a tremendous player. I think the thing that helps him too, same things that helps KJ Lacy. KJ Lacy was throwing the Ryan Williams for 2 years. Okay. You can look bad under throwing deep balls to guys like Ryan Williams. Your timing can look really bad. So Keelan Russell's been throwing to DeCorian Moore and all that other speed at Duncanville. That guy is ahead of the game in terms of putting balls in the right spots down the field with timing to really fast wide receivers.
Right. KJ Lacy obviously had Ryan Williams, so he's got the experience doing that as well. Ron, yep. Let me ask you a little bit different version question of this, okay? And here's my thought process. Texas right now is only carrying three scholarship quarterbacks on the entire roster. If Quinn leaves next year, wouldn't they just be carrying three again the next year if they only have a one quarterback class? Is that normal? Wouldn't you like to have four scholarship quarterbacks?
Yeah, I think ideally, obviously, because worst case scenario happens and you'd like to have four quarterbacks. But I think, Sark – has he recruited two quarterbacks in a class yet? He hasn't recruited two quarterbacks
yet. Quinn came out of the portal the year Malik came in. That's so not two high school quarterbacks. That's a little different.
Tom Herman did it once, didn't he? Tom Herman did it, I thought, a couple of times.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Cam Rising and Thompson. Yeah.
So it's not, listen, I'm all for it. I'm all about taking as many quarterbacks as you can, man, because you just cannot predict. Now, Texas is in a different situation where you've gotten Arch to stay, and Arch has been patient, and you got a 3-year starting quarterback coming back with Quinn Ewers, And, you know, so Texas, I think, is in a unique position. I think ideally, yes, you would like to have four. So I don't mind. I don't mind recruiting two quarterbacks out of high school in the same class. I don't think it's crazy these days, considering how unstable everybody's quarterback position is with the transfer portal. Usually Texas would be in a very fragile position here when it comes to their backup quarterback. I think everybody around the country is, if you got a really good one and they're not starting. But because the Mannings are just unique and different, Texas, I don't think, has to worry about that right now. And maybe that is why Sark doesn't seem concerned about that. Maybe he's like, no, I know we got quarterbacks. Nobody's leaving. Everybody's here to stay. Everybody's sticking with it. And not every program around the country can say that about their backup and third string quarterback right now.
Hey, by the way, if you want four. I think you want four. I don't know that you can keep four quality ones anymore.
No chance. There's no chance. Because, I mean, even look at Charles Wright. I mean, he goes to Appalachian State to take his shot at being a starter. You're not going to keep four quarterbacks anymore. And I think the thought of having two high school quarterbacks in a class is not a bad thought. I just don't think you're going to get too high. I think the days of getting two highly ranked quarterbacks in the same class are over because of NIL. I just don't think it's going to happen anymore. I want to say this too. We're talking about sacks, okay? So I went back and looked it up real quick. Texas had 32 sacks in 14 games last year, and that's in the Big 12, by the way. Not great offensive linemen outside of a couple teams. Michigan national champion at 39. Georgia the year before had 35. That was a different team. They had 49 on their first national championship team. Your 2020 winner had 46 sacks. So I think Texas really is, if you just look at it as a 14-game season, Texas really needs to inch up towards 40 sacks next year. They were 32 last year. They got to hit the quarterback. They got a quarterback more on the ground, especially in this conference.
Good stuff, Jerry. All right, one more question. This one coming from Antoine. And it says, by my account, 8 DBs have transferred and Ryan Watts left for the draft. Yeah. What does 8 transfers say about DB recruiting? Here's the problem. I really think they only lost one that was going to see any significant snaps. Right. And that's Austin Jordan. And even he was third team. It does ask the question, are they just replacing him with faster guys right now? And so guys, no offense to Xavion Bryce, for example, BJ Allen, guys like that, are they just finding faster guys right now, Jerry, in your opinion, and replacing them, or they're guys that didn't make a move that it was just time for them to go? What's the deal there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Look, I mean, it's crazy to look back at some of these recruitments. I mean, look, sometimes, and I'm not saying he's not going to be a good player, sometimes colleges miss. B.J. Allen was a one-time LSU commitment, could have gone to Bama, could have gone to Oklahoma, could have gone to A&M, went to Texas, right? I mean, if you're a kid from Texas, those are pretty much the five offers you want and the options you want. So I think sometimes, you know, look, I think B.J. Allen could go on and be a good player if he can stay healthy. So you're going to lose some good players though. I mean, that's the reality is when you recruit back to back to back top five classes and you're blue blood in the portal, you're going to have guys that leave, that go on to be really good players. I mean, I'll let Rod attack that a little different than I am. But there's nothing that shakes me up about that at all. Right now, I think Bobby, your point, I think the guys that left, could they go on and two or three of those guys will be good players somewhere else? Absolutely. I'll be surprised if Austin Jordan's not a good quality player in the Big 12. But look, if you're third team at Texas, that doesn't mean you can't play. That just means you can't play at Texas.
Your path was blocked.
Yeah.
That's what it means.
Yeah. I mean, and then a Bakuba comes in out of the portal, who's an NFL draft pick. So even if they said, okay, we're going to look at you at safety, well, you're already behind that guy.
Yeah. No, I think what happened – no, you had 8 DBs basically total in the last two transfer portal cycles. 6 of those are safeties. And just me as a DB, I remember being in that DB room. I think it was something about the ascent of Taff Daddy from walk-on to basically starting rep safety. And I think it's something about a young Derek Williams was a freshman who came in and basically started giving you starting reps. And I think a lot – because, like I said, I always give this example. They don't do this anymore. I don't think they do. But Coach Aquino would seat us based on the depth chart. So starters sit in the front, guys who are behind them sit in the back. And picture that in your head, the visual. And then some days he'd walk in there and he'd tap a guy on the shoulder and go, oh, you got to take the other seat. You're in the front. And essentially, imagine Taff Daddy going from the back of that room all the way to the front. And think about the psychological effect that has on the guys in that room. We're thinking, man, I thought I was battling for a spot. I thought I was gaining ground trying to get some of those starting reps. No, you're not. You just got surpassed by a guy who was walking. Nothing against him, by the way. Taff Daddy's a damn good player. Just pointing out he was a preferred walk-on that earned a scholarship and then earned starting reps. That's a hell of a – guys, it's the hardest way to get reps on a football field at a Power 5 program. It's tough. And all those guys who were highly recruited and highly rated guys, I think, honestly, they kind of saw the writing on the wall after that. And then your young Derek Williams comes in as a phenom, and he's the best coverage safety they got. So I think they're, like you said, Bobby, the path to play, they're thinking, well, I got no path. I just got surpassed on the depth chart, and those guys are younger than me. I got no path to play. I need to go somewhere else or change positions. So I think that's why you're at the exodus of safeties that leave. Now, Jaren Thompson was a starter for you at safety that left, but I think he ultimately saw, hey, I'm playing less. Yeah. Right, with a young Derek Williams out here, I'm playing less. They're going to get some other guy. They brought in Makuba, right? I'm going to play less when they go to the transfer portal and go get another asset. So I think he also started writing on the wall. The Terrence Brooks one is the only one that really – it's bewildering. That's the only one to me that doesn't make a lot of sense. The rest of them make total sense. That's what Jerry's saying. Those guys just didn't have a path to play here at Texas. And I see why. Like I said, that safety position, there's a reason you've had six out of those eight safeties leave. They watched those young safeties, and they watched Taff Daddy see the field, and they thought to themselves, well, I'm not going to see the field. If I haven't impressed coach by now, then I got no shot.
And Bobby, to your point, Texas absolutely had to dress speed at that position, at safety position. They had to get faster. I mean, look, and nothing against the Big 12, but just go look at how many guys got drafted. Texas had that. Texas, I thought they did a really good job getting to a national semifinal game with the lack of speed at a couple of spots. They've addressed that speed, and safety being the biggest one. They've addressed that with more athleticism and you know, Derek Williams, you're older, but Makuba, some of the younger guys that are going to come up. But Texas had to get faster at safety in the SEC. It's not, and I'm not just talking about wide receivers. I'm talking about the running backs in the league. I'm talking about the everything in the league. Texas had to improve the speed at safety, no doubt.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for tonight. I want to mention one last thing, if you don't mind. We have reached a little bit of a milestone at ontexasfootball.com. We now have more than 1,000 OGs, more than 1,000 OGs, and we've just been going for a month now. Appreciate you guys. Please come join us. Right now we have a special running. You get $20 off an annual subscription if you use the promo code OTFOG. It gets you a free annual subscription. We didn't want to make this some real expensive subscription or whatever. Or you can do $5.95 a month or $39.95 annually. On the annual, make sure you use them and apply the code OTFOG. Please join us. You would have read about Javion Cole, a little bit more about that kind of stuff. We're always out there each and every day with new information on the Longhorns. It'll help you keep up in between all these videos. We're also building a great community over there right now that I think is really different than a lot of others. It's very respectful for one another and to one another as well. So join us if you will. I want to say thank you for all the super chats tonight. Also, thank you to our friend Joe Brown, your veteran mortgage broker. You can call Joe at 512-663-4744. For Jerry Hamilton and Rod Babers, I'm Bobby Burton, as well as our producer, Matt Hutchison. Thanks, Matt. Hook 'em, guys. Have a good week this week.
Welcome.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.